Hasta la vista, movies.
It's B-Movies, thanks to Mitsui Bar, your source for all things NZIFF, thanks to the best place to go before or after.
NZIFF means New Zealand International Film Festival. And so that's all on. That's all happening. It's up and running. And it's an exciting festival, as always. I'd like to introduce you to Petra Brett Kelly.
Petra
Brett Kelly. Yeah. Thanks for coming. I know that's you just told me that was the correct way to say it, and I got it wrong straight away. Good one, Mike. who's the director of one of the movies in the festival and director of some fascinating documentaries in your previous bag of accomplishments. Mm. And, of course, Penelope Noir, who also has joined us because your particular documentary is about fashion. And Penelope Noir is our fashionista. And so she's going to sit in on this one as well and ask you questions as well. But Petra, what is your history? If you want to tell us a wee bit in a nutshell, your accomplishments?
Yeah, quickly grew up in Whakatane and then went to journalism school at Wellington. I've never finished anything, by the way. No, started law, didn't finish that.
I love that.
Started
I
arts,
love that.
Didn't finish that. This is bad, I suppose, in a student thing. Started journalism, didn't finish that. Started a job, the only job I've ever had, holiday pay, I've always wanted it. Didn't finish that. Went overseas, came back, started making
What was the job
films.
You did?
Oh, at the Rodney and White and Mutter Times.
Oh, right, okay.
But yeah. I sort of had to slightly get fired because...
Slightly get fired because
in a court report, I got the accused and the defender around the wrong way.
Oh, it's an easy mistake to make.
Yeah,
who's going to worry
so.
About that? Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Did you get your holiday pay?
I can't remember now. I mean, I was paid $9,000 a year. It was the most financial I've ever been. $9,000 a year I was paid back then, 26 years ago. Anyway,
since then, though, you've been making rapid more famous documentaries.
Yes. So this is my fifth feature doc. And so previous ones, like I've filmed in lots of places overseas, but A Flickering Truth, which was in Afghanistan, that was selected for the Oscars for the Best Foreign Language. Art Star and the Sudanese Twins, that won at Sundance. Beauty Will Save the World, A Crazy Tale with Colonel Gaddafi. When he was alive.
A crazy tale.
Yeah. And Māori Boy Genius, which obviously I filmed here and at Yale University. So, yeah, this one, Yellow is Forbidden, is about Gwalpe, who was made famous when Rihanna wore that enormous yellow cape 3 years ago at the Met Gala. And I am not, sorry, particularly interested in fashion. I'm interested in people and sort of was interested in following up with Gwalpe, googled her name, up popped the Rihanna thing. It had just happened. I picked
so,
up
so the what What was it, before the Rihanna thing, what was it about Gwalpe that made you...
So I'd finished my Afghanistan film and I had this idea, have this ideas folder, and I'd written something about Gwalpe from years ago. She used to make these shoes where a world was carved into the heel of the shoe. And I thought,
Yeah,
like this little kind of scene inside the heel of a wooden shoe. And I thought, wow, that's really cool. And so I sort of thought, oh, that'd be interesting.
You wouldn't think, I mean, the flickering... the Afghanistan movie was about the unearthing of the film archives,
exactly.
Wasn't it?
Exactly.
How that in any way relates to a woman carving stories into the heel of a shoe.
I know. But I suppose...
That'd be kind of cool. You've obviously got a working jotter pad.
Yeah. The thing is with me, I'm interested in isolation. You know, and so people who are working or living in isolation really interest me. And so with Gwalpe, I mean, that kind of show, I just thought, God, there's an amazing creativity in that element, just like in the archive in Afghanistan, and what is lost when you lose culture or arts or whatever. And so sort of googled her name, up popped the Rihanna thing, which had just happened. And the article I read, Gwalpe said, I didn't know who Rihanna was, and that was the line that kind of hooked me. Mm. So googled her name, got a phone number, picked up the phone. The third time I called, somebody spoke English to me. Obviously, they're running around trying to find somebody who spoke some English at her salon in Beijing. And I said, oh, I feel like I might come over. No, don't come. She's really private. And I said, no, I think I might come. No, please don't come. So I called up Jake Bryant, my DOP, and 3 days later we were on a plane and went straight from the airport to Gwalpe.
Yeah.
Talked with her for an hour. Maybe the New Zealand chocolates might have sealed the deal.
See, that's a trick. Yeah, I was going to say, what was the icebreaker? New Zealand chocolates.
Yeah, these amazing, I mean, they're friggin' expensive that you can get at the airport. $26 a box. But, you know.
That 26 bucks well spent.
Exactly.
And you didn't tuck into them on the way over yourself either.
Tried not to.
So for people who aren't sort of getting what's going on here, Gwalpe is, she's based in China.
Yes, she is. Yeah,
and her history, she grew up in when China was still very cloistered and...
The Cultural Revolution. Yeah, she was born during that period. So no arts, no culture, no intelligentsia, no education. But, you know, as she says, no makeup, no clothes, no fashion. She went to a school called the Light Industrial School No. 2. That was where she went. you know, she is sort of the first wave of, you know, and she said to her parents, I want to design. And they sent her down to the guy who fixed hems down the road. Mm. And she sort of got there and went, well, that's not what I had in mind. But so there's no, you know, no concept of fashion. So that's what she grew up in. So to come from that to be this extraordinary designer.
And the designs that that we see in the movie anyway, they're full on.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're like, it's like wedding cakes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wedding cake stuff. Absolutely. Like, I mean, you know, completely. She's got this sort of, her ethos is to try and show women how extraordinary women are. The more weight, the higher the heels, the more difficult the headgear. Like, you know, the Rihanna cape is 27 kg. I've picked it up. You can't actually lift it. You know, she needed three people to carry her up those stairs at the Met Gala. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, you'll see in my film, there's one outfit she's discussing, oh, it's 50 kg. And the people running the fashion show in Paris are like, well, we'll be taken to court for that.
That's a weight of three models.
Because she's got that mantra, hasn't she, that like the more weight you wear, the more responsibility you
hold.
And that's
exactly.
Kind of like the pretense for the people wearing that much weight.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, but the thing that attracted me was that here's this person sort of at a really interesting time of China in our world, and I say that in inverted commas. That's what interested me, is she's trying to break into our world. The response to her was kind of, you know, all that you can imagine, bit of racism, bit of kind of who the hell is she and all that sort of thing. She's trying to break into, you know, arguably the most exclusive club in the world.
This French fashion.
Yeah, 21 people, and you have to put out this €2 million show. She invited me. Actually, her next one is tomorrow. She invited me to it, but clearly I'm not there.
You're at BFM. Right on!
It was difficult to decide, BFM or Paris. But, yeah, and so she makes these really, and you'll see in my film, you know, how she comes up with these ideas and what she creates. It's just, so the collection that you see created in my film is largely based on Catholicism and this one church in Switzerland. And then, you know.
Of course.
Yeah. and yeah, amazing.
And yeah, so you travelled with her to Paris?
Yeah,
as well?
So I was with her off and on for 2 years. So we did,
a good stint.
9 countries and 14 blocks of filming.
And the French part of it is that woe betide her if she called it haute couture.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You're not allowed to even use those words unless you're one of the 21. And so she's still on that journey. She tried it. Yeah. Oh, it's complete. But I'm not allowed to say things like that. But yeah, it is. But, you know, there is incredible, for her, like there's this moment in the film where she's backstage and the weight of it all, she's this tiny little thing, and the weight of kind of, you know, re-educating us out here, sort of going, well, China isn't all about knockoffs and plastic toys and, you know, fake, that we have this 5,000 years of history. And that's what she draws on. And, you know, you can see it in her work. It's very regal and royal.
Because she's kind of being responsible for bringing all that tradition back, really, isn't she?
Yeah,
it's all been lost.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, she's had to retrain. She has 500 workers, and she's had to retrain them all in, you know, in embroidery, because that was all lost during the Cultural Revolution.
Crazy, yeah. And she, her mother told her tales of what the embroidery in the palace.
Yes, you know, like,
and she just and she imagined it.
Yeah,
as opposed to seeing it, which is crazy.
Yeah, I know.
And I mean, the title "Yellow is Forbidden." What is it? What's that about? Because I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's a
very Handmaid's Tale, which I might have.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
So Yellow is Forbidden sort of comes from a story her mother and her grandmother, you know, her mother tells in the film, but her grandmother was always like, but you can't use, you know, can't wear gold and you can't wear yellow because those are the royal colours. So they're only colours. Even today in China, the older generation are just like, so her mother, who's blind, is sitting there in the film and kind of going, but you can't wear gold or yellow.
Commoners.
No commoners can wear that. And she's wearing a jacket Guolpay made her, with gold stitching in it. And so there's this wonderful kind of, you know, Guolpay and her father are kind of looking, kind of going, well, let's not tell her that she's actually wearing a bit of gold in that jacket.
Fantastic. So it must be great to be able to bring showcase something like this to the world.
Oh, yeah. So it premiered at Tribeca Film Festival a couple of months ago.
Well done, by the way.
Yeah, and then a couple of market screenings at Cannes and then back here. So, yeah, it's in here in Auckland on the 22nd, Sunday 22nd at the Mighty Civic, and then Wellington, blah, blah, Dunedin,
Lala. It's also on at the Civic on the 26th of July and Westgate on the 27th. Mm. And we've got a couple of tickets. We have two tickets. A double pass to go to Yellow is Forbidden at the New Zealand International Film Festival. It's the night at the Civic on the 22nd of July. Now, you're going to be at that.
I will be. I'll be at the first
Q&A, Q&A.
Yes, and then I'll be at the first turn. Then I have to quickly fly to Wellington. And you'll see me in the frock that Gwalpe made me.
She made you. When
my previous film was, you know, selected for the Oscars, she was like, I'll make you a frock. And I was like, oh God, no, I'm not going to the Oscars. I'm just, you know, selected. And she was like, no, I'll make you a frock. So it was kind of
the same. Why didn't you go to the Oscars for? You go to the Oscars.
Why didn't you come to BFM in it?
Oh, I should have. Oh my God. But no, you had to come to the movie. Yeah, so I was kind of like, well, you make whatever you want. So it's an extraordinary gown. It's not really something I would choose, but it is beautiful.
Is it? So it must have been a fascinating insight for you into the world of fashion, which is it's so massive and so intense, isn't it?
And I guess it's
a very easy thing to look at from afar and go, oh, fashion, how about that?
Yeah.
But to be involved in it to that extent must be amazing.
Yeah. And you know, the amazing thing, because I watched a lot of fashion films, which I'm sure you've seen, but she is on a different level. So she, because she's in business, she's across every single detail. Like one day there was sort of a bit of, you know, sequencing on a sleeve, and she was like, oh no, so made the person untake. So it's just 500 people doing all hand sewing. Everything's hand sewn. That's part of the rules of haute couture. So she's really into the detail, but she also has these really interesting business sort of side. So she has about 500 clients, largely in China, but now of course it's growing, and she makes them pay the money up front, up to $1 million a year to be a client, and then it's like a credit note, and then you mark it off. Yeah. So we sat there, and a woman spent
unprecedented over there, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, this is how she decided to work about 15 years ago.
From the light industrial school number two.
Yes, exactly.
To $1 million credit notes.
So it's big business, you know. And also because she's already been approached to be bought out by some of these big, you know, things like LMVH, which own a lot of the lines, and she was like, no, I'm doing my own thing. So she's quite unique that she's managed to keep her own business too.
Wow. Mm. So the movie is, Petra Brett Kelly is the director. She's with us this morning, and the movie is called Yellow is Forbidden. It's part of the New Zealand International Film Festival. Once again, shown on the 22nd of July, the 26th of July, both at the Civic and Westgate on the 27th of July. Thank you so much for coming in, and wish you all the very best
thank
in the
you.
Future and for the showings and everything and the frock on the night.
Yes.
And what's next for you? Have you on to the next, next thing now?
You
sound like someone who's got, you're ready to rumble halfway through the last thing.
sorry. I've got some ideas. I've got two that I'm working on at the moment here. And then I'm waiting. I've got a subject in Saudi and a subject in Africa, and they're both quite keen, but to next year. So I'm kind of waiting for them to catch up with me. I want to be there now, but yeah, so some other ideas.
Hey, thank you so much for coming in this morning. Really fascinating to talk to you, and I hope the movie does really well.
Thank you.
Cheers. That's Buffalo Girls by Malcolm McLaren. I thought I'd play that before the news, because after the news, we're going to be talking about Vivienne Westwood, and she wouldn't want anything to do with that. I mean, I don't know if you know about that, but it's
BFM News.
Atamarie, good morning. Call Ben Weber, Toko Ingoa, ko te iwa karaka. It's 9 o'clock. There have been moves to revive a controversial Ruatanifa Dam scheme. A group of Central Hawke's Bay businessmen are hoping to resurrect the scheme after buying the intellectual property rights from the Hawke's Bay Regional Council for $100,000. The council spent $14 million and 4 years trying to get the scheme off the ground before the Supreme Court ruled last year it could not flood a large parcel of conservation land. Waterholdings CHB has purchased the rights to the scheme from the Regional Council's investment arm and will be looking into options for reviving the scheme. The National Party says it would undo or restrict major components of the government's families package. The package scrapped the previous national government's tax cuts in favour of giving thousands of low and middle income families extra money. National leader Simon Bridges says his party supports the changes to paid parental leave, but not the winter housing payments and baby bonus. He also says the families package is helping a relatively small number of families, and tax cuts would have helped more people. Social Development Minister Carmel Cipollone says 64,000 children could be lifted out of poverty under the government's package. She says the government is committed to doing as much as it can to reduce child poverty. German Interior Minister Horst Seehofer has threatened to resign after rejecting Chancellor Angela Merkel's EU migration deal. Merkel has won pledges of support from key allies in Bavaria's Christian Social Union, prompting Seehofer to threaten to quit, demanding a stop to irregular migrants at Bavaria's border. Ending the alliance between the two party leaders would see the government without a parliamentary majority, potentially leading to new elections. Seehofer has said in a statement he'll not let himself be dismissed by a chancellor who is only a chancellor because of him. Rescue workers have confirmed the football team trapped in a cave in northern Thailand are alive after 9 days of searching. Governor Narong Sakosot Tanakorn of the Chiang Rai province says Thai Navy SEALs found the team inside the cave on the border with Laos and Myanmar. The team included 12 boys between 11 and 16 and their 25-year-old coach. They entered the cave 9 days ago and became trapped by rising flood water.
9 days is a long time for a bunch of 12, freaked out underground living. I mean, they weren't prepared for that.
It's a very long time, and I don't understand what you eat in a cave that's been flooded by flood water.
Well, this is the thing. This is what fascinates me. They haven't eaten each other.
Well, I hadn't even thought about that.
Cannibalism. Cannibalism, that's the first thing that goes through your head, isn't it?
Do you think there's anything to eat in there?
You've never been trapped with other adults anywhere. Well, a situation like that. You start sizing people up. You start looking at people and going, oh, yep.
I wonder if there's
lifestyle. Fish. But you wonder what?
Do you think there's fish in there?
I don't know whether they would have had their fishing gear with them if there were fish. I think there would have been maybe... I mean, they probably had some food with them, but not a lot of food, you know? So maybe it was a matter of just...
That's true.
Or maybe lichen and moss. Well, moss, lichen. We're lucky we have the cave wetter down here. Massive wetter. Good eating, too. Good eating if you catch them. Hard because in the dark. I guess if you were fish, they'd be those sort of blind cave fish, so they wouldn't see you coming. What do you send? Like, do you send one kid down on a rope underwater?
I'm very interested to know this point.
Me too. Like, I know that they're to get them out. They because of the situation, because it's so flooded, that they're going to have to maybe teach them the rudimentary skills of scuba diving. Serious? I'm serious.
Wow.
Because that's how they found us. They sent scuba divers and scuba divers found them. But to get them now, they've got to figure out how to get them out because they'll be able to get them food and stuff. Maybe, hopefully, maybe a light and some magazines and a rug. I don't know how you take a rug underwater to them. So.